Now, you listen to me. The most important thing that you must remember, that is, always appear half drunk. You almost think you look helpless. You understand that?
Yes, teacher.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 2 of the Dragons Forever podcast with me, Holly Mahal. It's 2016, so as you can probably guess, it's been quite a while since the last one came out, which was about essentially a year ago. It's episode 2 and I'm very, very happy and grateful to have my good friend Mikel, aka Mike Forte, as you guys might know him, the music producer, is joining us today, and he's a fellow kung fu film nut and fanatic.
Hey, how you doing, man? It's good to be involved in this podcast.
No, man, I'm glad to have you here, man. So we're going to be talking about Ip Man 3 because we went to go see it on the premiere, didn't we? So that's really what we're going to be chatting about today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite a short notice and a bit of a surprise about the release date of Ip Man 3. And actually, when we went to see it, because it's right on Christmas Eve.
When I found out that it was happening on Christmas Eve, I knew you would be there anyway. I was like, yeah, and there's one person who's definitely going to come out, regardless of whether it's Christmas Eve, is going to be Mikel. So.
Oh yeah, I wasn't missing that at all, man.
No way. But so it took us a couple of weeks to get together or sit down, even computer to computer, to be able to Skype, to be able to do this podcast, because we're both busy young dads. You'll probably hear the kids from both sides in the background at some point during this podcast, won't you?
Oh yeah, my lot aren't very quiet. They might express their excitement for the love of kung fu.
Oh, absolutely, so. Absolutely. We, you know, all the listeners out there, we've got our kids well trained, man. They're already on their kung fu journey, man. They're already watching kung fu films, and we're very proud fathers to say that we've got them already watching their Bruce Lees and their Jackie Chans and Jet Lees and whatnot.
Yeah, of course, man.
But for this podcast, we're just free flowing, you know, just like kung fu moves. You know, we're just going through. As you see, that I like that little link there.
Yeah, I like that. I like what you did there.
We're just gonna talk about Ip Man 3 because that's kind of the flavor of the month at the moment, and hopefully get this out just before or around the international worldwide release of Ip Man 3. Me and Mick, as we said, very lucky to catch the Christmas Eve release of it here in England. We know it's at the same time it was released sort of in Asia, but it's not been released in America and that yet. However, I did read online via Rick at Eastern Heroes that the premiere, or the LA premiere for Ip Man, which I think is January 20th, is going to have both kids, I can hear the kids in the background, is going to be both, is going to have Mike Tyson and Donnie Yen there for like an after party event. And you can like go and you can buy tickets, man. That would have been so cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I think the UK release date is around 15th January.
Oh, okay. So that's even...
Apparently.
That's pretty... So it may actually even be out sort of now whilst this podcast is being done. So that's all good. We're still going to talk about it. And hopefully for those of you who don't or haven't been to see it yet by the time this podcast is out, we'll give you guys a bit of an idea of what to expect in the film. All right, so I thought before we jump straight into the review, Mikel, maybe we'll just do a little overview of some of the news that's coming out in the world of martial arts action films. Probably the biggest thing right now, because we're in January 2016, kind of related to Ip Man, I guess, as well, is obviously Sammo directed or action directed the first two Ip Man movies, and he was celebrating his 64th birthday.
Can't believe it, man. It's still going strong and still, you know, choreographing some excellent fight scenes.
Oh yeah, definitely still the man for sure. And yeah, so it's his birthday this month, and big news on the Sammo front being that he's also releasing a movie. He's got an upcoming movie which I've been a bit excited about for a while. It's called the Bodyguard, and it's like, I think it's the first film he's directed for a long time now. If he hasn't directed fully directed a film since, I think, Once Upon a Time in China and America, which was Jet Li back in the late 90s, 97, yeah. I think. So
yeah, 96 or 7 it would have been.
So that's a long time, you know, for an actual Sammo Hung directed movie. So I'm looking forward to that. It looks like it's got pretty much you know, all the old school legends are in there. I think it's got quite a lot of the Seven Little Fortunes are in there. I think Ewan Bue's got a role in there. There's even Shoei Hark, I think, is in there for like a cameo or something.
It'll be good to see Yen Biao on screen again,
though. Yeah, definitely. I think they've got everybody, but pretty much Jackie Chan, which I think Jackie was too busy with his own schedule. But, you know, I don't think, you know, I think everyone's still waiting for the three brothers, like,
to come back together again.
I don't know when it's going to happen because, like, everyone's sort of... Everyone's getting on now, but I think on Twitter, I don't know who I was mentioning somebody on Twitter, just to mention at Auburn Digital. That's who the podcast is being done through. So if you guys wanna got any ideas about upcoming podcast ideas for martial arts films, get us on there. Somebody on Twitter was talking about I was having a little discussion with somebody on Twitter about the Three Brothers, and we just want to come up with like storylines for like maybe what a new Three Brothers movie might look like. And I was thinking, like, obviously now these guys are getting a little bit older. I was thinking maybe they could be like the dads of like three new sort of martial arts people, and you know, they could do like, I was thinking like a spin on a, you know, some sort of like, you know, My Lucky Stars type of thing where they're, you know, they might be a bit of comedy and, you know, like sort of...
Yeah, because a lot of people know them for that series.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd be, I reckon something like that would be wicked. Just to have them, you know, as the elder statesmen, and they've got like their kids, or like maybe got to come together to take on some sort of adversary, or, you know, some sort of competitor. Maybe they've got like some shop or some restaurant, yeah, typical stuff. The storylines never need to be like anything major. They just need to be enough for the narrative for us to put like martial arts films, martial arts fight scenes around. So that'd be my idea. If anyone's got any other like wicked ideas, we should start like a little discussion about it online and see. We know, maybe send it. We could send like a mock script over to you know, to Jackie Chan and say, come on, man, you need to get involved with Sammo again one more time. So yeah, so that's big news. I guess Sammo's got a new film coming out, Bodyguard. It looks good. Be sure to check out the trailers and the teasers. Well, depending on how long it takes for me to actually put this podcast out, the film will probably be out by that point, and it'll probably be old news. Yeah, that's definitely something that's big. Any other films that you're looking forward to, Mick?
Probably Crouching Tiger.
Yeah, oh yeah, number two. Yeah, that looks pretty good.
It'll be good to catch up with that. Who's actually doing the choreography?
I think Wu Ping, I'm going to assume. I think Wu Ping's done the choreography on that, because I think he did the last one as well, and he's quite tight with those guys. So he seems to be quite the go-to. He's the go-to person, isn't he? Really, the go-to choreographer for a lot of these things. And I'm going to say that because obviously Donnie's in Crouching Tiger 2, and they worked together on 8-Man 3. So I reckon more than likely he's the choreographer for it. I know it's being made by Netflix, Netflix are becoming quite big in the game now. They're doing quite a lot of stuff, making their own.
Yeah, I think definitely continuing to have those Netflix exclusives. It just gets everybody talking about it, especially in light of, you know, kung fu martial arts movies, because sometimes they don't get the same exposure as the Hollywood titles do. So, yeah. Big titles like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is, you know, it's going
to
be great.
That's a big look, yeah. So I might have to just set up a 30-day free trial just for that. I'm so cheap, man. I'm so cheap. No, I'll have to definitely get on Netflix for that, for sure, because that's definitely one film I'm looking forward to seeing, because there's not much for the fans out there, is there? There's not an awful lot of martial arts films, you know. There's not obviously there's a genre, but there's not really, it's not like the good old days in the back, you know. Even, you know, it's not like the 80s or the 90s where we had loads of martial arts films, and it's not, you know, we had a little bit, you have a little bit interspersed here and there. You had a few in the 2000s. You had maybe a year or so from Thailand. There was like all the Tony Jaa stuff that came out, and then a few people. And then, you know, you had bits here and there. You had The Raid, you know, but there's not really a massive amount of martial arts related films that come out. So, you know, you've got to take them where you can. And I guess that's why, you know, that's why we had to go out on Christmas Eve and taking Ip Man 3, man.
Absolutely. And a cracking event to go out for, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Man 3 then. Mikhail, what are you saying, man? I've tried to come up with a couple of different areas for It Man 3 that we should probably cover, that I think the people will probably want to know. So fellow Kung Fu fanatics like us, who've you know, their whole childhood has been consumed by martial arts films, and they love them. I thought trying to break down the movie into a few different areas. So I guess generally in terms of the story itself is it's for those who don't know much about it, I'll try and sum it up as quick as I can. We're now at It Man 3. So it's the third in the Ip Man film series. So he's a little bit older now. You know, he's obviously settled into Hong Kong. You know, he's a Wing Chun teacher, and he's just sort of, you know, just a sort of living a sort of a kind of semi-retired existence, I'd say, kind of. You know, he's just sort of running his.
Yeah, it seems to be away from the turmoil that he had faced during the first two movies.
Mm-hmm.
With his family settled in. And yeah, everyone seems to have that respect for him as the protector and overseer of the village.
Yeah,
very wise man, family orientated. So yeah, he seems to be quite settled within his personal life in this movie.
And then you've got the foreign devils, the Guaylos coming in. Oh, actually, we learned a really interesting word, didn't we? Because we went with our friend Will, who speaks Cantonese. He was lucky; he didn't have to read the. He didn't have to read the subtitles. He was just taking it all in. I remember asking him halfway through the film. I was like, "You probably don't need these subtitles, do you?" He's like, "Nah." I was like, "Yeah, that's what it's like for me when I watch Punjabi films." To be fair, I still need the subtitles even when I watch Punjabi films, but that's a separate situation. I need to learn more Punjabi. You know, it's funny because he told us that because I think the Quilo is like the white ghost or something, isn't it?
White ghost, yeah.
And he was telling us that there's a. There's a word for a black ghost as well. And,
I can't remember what he said, you know.
I was like, I wonder if there's one for a brown ghost. But there probably is. I was like, it's a good term. But I guess it's generally used in the films over the years for sort of foreign oppression. It tends to always be the Brits because it's, well, you know, naturally they're the bad guys because of all their history of various oppression around the world. So they're obviously shown in this film as well because they're quite corrupt as most of them are in these films, and there's a role of Mike Tyson, who sort of himself's a bit of a dodgy sort of real estate type of guy who goes in and he's buying lots of property, and he wants the school that Ip Man's children or Ip Man's son goes to, doesn't he? And he's trying to buy that land however he can, and he's obviously trying to put pressure on the head teacher to sell it, and
yeah,
the head teacher doesn't want to sell it. Yeah,
a bit of a wheeler and dealer of sorts. Tries to not get his hands too dirty.
Yeah, because he's got he's always got the henchmen to do it in true kung fu fashion.
And it's actually the henchmen that seem to be doing all of the initiating in this film. You know, aggravating, trying to show off their flamboyancy with the, you know, with the foreign clothes and. I guess the older heads in the village can kind of see the infiltration of Western culture within those guys, and that's what really ruffles a few feathers in this film.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So it's a pretty simple storyline. You know, Tyson wants the school land so he can build whatever he's building. On the back of that, he runs like illegal sort of fight clubs to make his money. You know, he sends his heavies in to go and basically scare the head teacher to signing over the paperwork, which is I think that's like the first fight. I think that's where you kind of see a little bit of a glimpse of things sort of taking over, because they sort of, some of his henchmen come over and try and give the head teacher a bit of a roughing up, and then that's when you see Ip Man sort of come in. Because they walk past Ip Man, don't they? So Ip Man comes to pick up his. Oh, that's right. Ip Man picks up his son because his son's got into a little kung fu fight with another kid.
That's right.
Yeah. So he gets called into the school and he has to pick up his son, and obviously he's trying to tell him off. And the other boy who was involved in the fight, you know, Ip Man says, you know, you can come home to get some dinner with us because your dad hasn't come, or your guardian hasn't come to pick you up. So he takes the kids home. Obviously, on his way out, the heavies are coming in from Mike Tyson's side, and obviously they're about to kick off with the head teacher, and that's where, you know, you get to see Ip Man sort of come back and throw a few moves and sort of scare them off. And that's where the whole thing comes from, doesn't it? Because then they go back and say, oh, you know, this guy...
We seem to have a problem.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it. And then, you know, we have a problem with this guy. He's stopping us. He's protecting the school. And that's kind of where the... that's sort of where the sort of the back and forth in terms of the fights rely sort of mainly. But coming out of that, the other kid's father... I think it's his father, or it's like his guardian or something. He calls him dad, doesn't he, anyway? So I think it's like, or at least he's looking after him anyway. His dad is the other sort of main guy in the movie. I can never say his name correctly. It's like Jing Zhang or Zhang Jing.
Yeah, Jing Zhang.
He's been in a few of the... he's been in quite a few other Kung Fu films. In the past, he's done a bit of work in on like the other Ip Man movie, which was Grandmaster, and he was in the Legend film.
SPL2.
Yeah, SPL2. I haven't seen SPL2. I haven't heard the most raving reviews for it, to be honest. I haven't heard many raving reviews for many martial arts related films of late. That's why, you know, Ip Man 3, I knew it would be good, but I was a bit apprehensive. I was like, oh, I hope it's not like, it doesn't, like, it's not just a complete flop and there's only like a few good things in there, which I'm very happy to say that's not the case. Would you agree? It was pretty really, really, really enjoyable film.
Yeah, it was, man. It was really, you could see that the focus had been put on that cinematography, really beautiful kind of scenes, well filmed, I'd say.
Absolutely. Sorry, I keep going off, and I'm going to do this all the way throughout the discussion. So the kid's dad is played by that Jing Zhang guy. Apologies to listeners, you can probably tell me, you can correct me later. And he's a rickshaw driver. You know, he's very sort of just humble guy, but he makes money for his son by partaking in these illegal fight clubs that Mike Tyson runs. He is a Wing Chun practitioner too, has a desire to open up his own school, as most Kung Fu masters do. He sort of has this, I wouldn't say he's completely jealous or envious of Ip Man. I think he respects Ip Man, but I guess he wants some of that shine as well. He wants people to say, like, you know, that
he was really, really quite passionate, very focused, and would stop at nothing to kind of get his dreams really fulfilled.
Yeah, so he's then he comes to Ip Man's house to pick up his son. Even from the beginning, there's this sense of he wants to try Ip Man. You know, isn't there? It's like, you know, oh, you do Wing Chun. You know, I also do Wing Chun. It'd be nice to spar or whatever one day just to see. He believes that he's got the true Wing Chun, and Ip Man's has got, you know, his own style. He doesn't believe it's the pure Wing Chun. But there doesn't seem to be any specific animosity until, obviously, you know, the animosity, I guess, becomes when the Jing Zhang character realizes that for him to become anybody in Hong Kong, he needs to have his own presence. He needs to have his own school. He doesn't have the money, obviously, to fund that. So he joins the henchmen to raise more money and stuff, which brings a really, really interesting fight scene between him and a Kung Fu just icon, classic to all, you know, fellow Kung Fu film fans like me and Mikhail. Because when we saw him on screen, we were just like, no way!
It took a while to sink in.
No way, that cannot be him. It cannot be Lung Kar Yan, a.k.a.
Beardy,
man. I was like, no way, is that really him? And I remember we just looked at each other, I was like, no way! It's, you know, it's my man from, you know, 101 Kung Fu films. And he was in this film. I was like, that was just brilliant to see him in there as a, you know, he's a Sifu as well of, you know, of his own martial arts school. And he's trying to do right because it's his students who
actually
are...
Actually his student, yeah, he goes off the rails.
That's right. So it's his students who's sort of leading all that those attacks on the school and stuff. And so, you know, he's trying to obviously keep the peace. The students have got no respect for him. They say, you know, you're not even making enough money being a Sifu. You have to fix umbrellas and all this stuff. Because he's got a little umbrella Shaq, hasn't he, somewhere where he fixes umbrellas and stuff? And
yeah, and he's just very, like, very humble. You can very see humble, that.
So that's quite interesting, because there's a fight between Xinjiang or Jiangjing, however you say that, and that's, I think that's his, like, his first mission, I think, is to go sort out Beardy, to keep him out, to keep him from, like, basically, he's obviously telling Ip Man, because Ip Man's now at this point got, like, his students running sort of 24-hour security on the school, which itself has an impact on his relationship with his wife, as we sort of find out. This film's very it's got more of an emotional side, hasn't it? It's more of a story. This film, it's not so much just loads of kung fu fights, of which there are, but it's more based on the on true facts, obviously, in Ip Man's life. So his wife has health issues, and we find out that she's battling cancer. So there's that whole side of him having to take a step away from the kung fu side. Which sort of comes throughout later in the film. But the whole first part is he's obviously away from his wife, because he's protecting the school, and Beardy is also trying to protect the school, but we realise it's his students who are doing it. So they go and send this guy in to just basically take Beardy out of the equation. And I thought it was great from one side seeing Beardy in the film, because, you know, it was a massive hat tip to all the guys who've loved kung fu films, because, you know, he was he's been in so many films, so many classic films. The only thing that doesn't sit fully well with me, and, you know, I know we had this conversation on the walk back, you know, it was just the fact that Sammo wasn't involved, and I keep saying this. It was just, you know, I've said it in the first episode of the podcast. You know, I went on about my love for Sammo, and it's just in terms of Sammo as a martial arts choreographer. For me, I still think he's the best who's done it. And I know Wu Ping's wicked.
Feel almost as if there's something missing in a way.
Yeah.
From some of the fight scenes, as much as they were really enjoyable and well filmed, there's this certain grit and really kung fu technical minded.
Yeah, for sure.
Approach that he has to his films.
Absolutely. It was just for me. I just can, you know, I mean, clearly you wouldn't have, you know, you wouldn't have got Sammo and Beardy on screen together, because, you know, he dies in episode 2. Sorry for anybody who hasn't seen it, man, but I'm assuming you have seen it, man, 1 and 2, if you're listening to this podcast. You know, so with obviously Sammo passing in Ip Man 2, obviously there wouldn't have been him and Beardy on screen together. But because him and Beardy worked, you know, so well in the past and worked on, you know, so many films, you know, the most famous one people probably remember would be like The Victim. Yeah. You know, they worked on so many things together, so it would have been like, just to know that, you know, maybe for one last time, Sammo was, you know, sort of directing, you know, Lung Kai Yan even just for that short space of time that he was in the film, I think that would have just been like the icing on the cake for me. Otherwise, you know, Ip Man 3, you know, can't take anything away from Wu Ping. He is an absolute legend in the game. He's done, you know, 1,000,001 films. You know, nothing can take anything away from what he's given to the genre.
One of my favorite films, actually, and probably one of my favorite fight scenes of all time, is probably got to be Buddha's Fist.
Oh, that's it now. That's it. I'll forget about Ip Man 3, man. Just forget. Let's even forget talking about Ip Man 3 now. Let's just go back to the old school.
We didn't want to do this, did we?
We did not want to do this.
You know, I have to mention, like, my love for Yang Wu-Pin as a director, choreographer. Is massively up there, like, really respected guy. So I was always going to enjoy this film regardless.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's one. I'd say, you know, for the listeners, I think, you know, Mikel is definitely more on some of more of the stuff that Wu Ping sort of done. You've watched a lot. I mean, I've seen a lot of the earlier ones, but I don't remember them all as much, like the Miracle Fighters and all that stuff. I've seen them all, but I just don't remember the ins and outs of them all. And I think you're more definitely, you've got a lot more about a lot of those films than I do. I kind of went into sort of, you know, I guess you've got Wu Ping and he's done Jackie Chan, and then, you know, he's directed Jackie Chan in, you know, Drunken Master and all that. And then I've sort of, and Yu Wu Ping's done loads of stuff on the side, and I sort of followed all the other kind of stuff and not watched as much of the Wu Ping stuff. And I know you're a big advocate for Wu Ping, as you should be. But like I like Wu Ping, but there was like stuff that he's done that there's just elements of his fight choreography that don't really sit well with me. Sit well with me is not the correct way, the correct word. I love his stuff, but for me, it's just some of the wire foo that he sort of really, really pushed for and he's become famous for. I think there was just elements in some of the films where it's like, I didn't think it was needed. And in some films, it was, you know, it worked well to go with what he's trying to do. So I totally get why he does some of the waifu work in his films. But I just think with Sammo, you don't really get that all the time, or at least in the early work, you wouldn't get it. And when you do get it, it's to extenuate a certain move, where even in Ip Man 3, I thought there was elements where the waifu sort of took over in places where I think, kind of as you mentioned, if we had a main man Sammo on it, I don't think you would have got some of that stuff. For me, the where that really was heightened for me in the film is there's a scene very similar to the other Ip Mans where, like in Ip Man 1, he when he goes into the dojo to fight the Japanese and he says, like, I want to take on 10 men.
Yeah,
and then in the second version, I said the second version. It's like I'm talking about Star Wars. In Ip Man 2, there's a bit where his student is like being captured by the other rival gang, which are like Sammo's students, and he has to go into this sort of like fish market to go and like bring him back.
And yes, I remember the scene.
And both of those two scenes from the first two films were similar to where in episode 3, I'm saying now, I've got Star Wars on my mind. I've got Star Wars on my mind because, you know, obviously Donnie's got a part in Rogue One, which is the spin-off thing. And obviously you've got the Raid Trio, they turn up in the Star Wars film. So
yeah,
it's all merging in together here in the kill.
I really want to see that, but anyway.
So elements of those first two films, they come up in Ip Man 3, and that fight scene where he sort of goes in where the henchmen have called him, and you know they've took his son. They said, you know, you've got to you to get him back, you got to come in, you know, you got to come see us, and you got to, you know, you basically got to stop trying to interfere and whatever. Where he comes in and he brings the long staff with him, you know, the Wing Chun staff, and he brings that with him. And you think, oh yeah, this is gonna be a sick fight. It's all built up in a certain way, just the same way it was built up in Ip Man 1 and Ip Man 2, where he comes into this this place and he's like, yeah, I'll take on 8 men or whatever it is. After like the first 2 punches or something, it goes really close in. All the shots are really close.
Yeah,
you know, and you're like,
and you see him kind of maneuvering his way throughout that landscape, which inside the warehouse scene was where he's jumping over obstructions and climbing up onto towers and stuff. And it's you didn't get to see that really close combat, like technical foot movement and footwork and hand-to-hand combat.
That's bang on. That's literally what I was thinking. It's like the scene like called for like something big. Then, you know, like, you know, traditionally you got in the old school kung fu films, you have, you know, or even modern day sort of martial arts films, you always knew what you were getting. You know, film starts, you got a bit of the narrative, you got a couple of fights at the beginning, you get a nice, like, sort of big fight in the middle, and then everything's built up for, like, maybe one or two massive fights at the end of the film. So you know exactly where you are with kung fu films. And this sort of middle fight scene was like, built in, you know, because that the character, Xing Zhang's character is, like, now, you know, contemplating whether he wants to still stay with the henchmen, because they kidnap his son as well, you know, and then so he comes back in and he's obviously changes for good because he's obviously come to rescue his son. And then you think, oh, it's going to be a massive fight and it's going to be really well, you know, because like you said, the cinematography of it was brilliant in this film. It was all set up, you know, you see you got roaming cameras, you know, the camera's on a crane and it's moving in and out, and you think, oh, this is going to be like an awesome fight scene. And don't get me wrong, it was a good fight scene, but I just think Sammo would have just took that scene to another level because he would have kept it more grounded, I think. And I don't know. I mean, maybe because I'm a Wing Chun practitioner myself. I think I've always seen things in the last two films and stuff that Sammo's done. You know, like, you know, again, going to go back old school, For me, Prodigal Son's probably my favourite kung fu film.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, you know, Wing Chun, like, just brilliancy. You know, Warriors 2's got some awesome Wing Chun in there. And, you know, they've been made by, they're made by Sammo. I'm not saying that Wu Ping can't do Wing Chun, because he can. He clearly can do Wing Chun films. But for me, I just think Sammo's got the edge. I think he just knows, he knows how to bring the best out of whatever style
I mean, it is that he's doing. It's interesting you say that as well. And I'm glad you mentioned the fact that you know, Yen Wu Ping can do Wing Chun films, because the film titled Wing Chun, I think it was 93 or 94.
Yeah, that's, yeah, it was definitely not the one with Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh, yeah. And actually, Donnie Yen was also in that film, wasn't he?
Was he? I don't know. You probably, I thought it was Jet Li, but you might be.
Remember, yeah. I think Donnie Yen was actually in that film. He had a short piece in there, but he wasn't the main character. But that film, I actually liked, and you do see a lot more hand-to-hand combat. So it is something that Yen Wu Ping can do.
Yeah.
If that's what he really wants to get out of it. But I still have this feeling that he was going for a totally different style in this film. It was almost like it almost felt like a wrap-up of the three films as this beautiful piece of a film. And he wanted to focus more on the cinematography rather than the real nitty-gritty hand-to-hand combat, which you had already seen in the previous two films.
You know what? You know what, Mikhail? That's a really good point. I didn't think of it like that, and that it actually kind of does feel like that, to be honest. Because I feel it does feel like Ip Man 3 is like sort of wrapped up the you know, the trilogy. I don't know if he'll do another one. I don't know if there's any need. I don't think there's really a need to do another one personally. But you know, in traditionally Hong Kong films have always sort of followed the commercial success. You know, for one films. A success, they will do that series to death, basically, you know, and they'll just keep doing sort of sequels to it. But I don't know if Donnie Yen will do another one, because I think you're right. I think he's really done justice to this film series. I think.
Yeah. I think this is his last one.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I mean, we would never say never in Hong Kong, I guess, but I think you're right. It would seem to be a very fitting. Sort of tribute, I think. It ends really nicely. You're right about the cinematography is brilliant in this film. It's really nicely shot. It sort of then, you know, after that fight, you know, there's like literally, I think, maybe 30 seconds, and it moves straight into the fight with Mike Tyson. It's like, it's just quickly, isn't it? It feels like quickly, okay, here's Mike Tyson. We're using him to sell to the Western market. Let's just quickly get him in. Let's get him out. And then we'll just move on. We'll move on with like half of the film now is all about story and emotion. And, you know, which is fine. You know, it's all good. It's like literally, I think about 30 seconds after that, there's like some sort of link for him to go from that fight into going to see Mike Tyson in his sort of warehouse.
He wants to basically just confront him and say, you know, I've never met you before. You agreed to speak with me. Let's resolve this, you know.
What did you make of that fight? Because that's what obviously a lot of the marketing has been pushed to for I guess everybody else. I mean, for us, we're probably a little bit more obviously in the know in terms of kung fu films. So we're looking at it for other stuff. You know, we got excited when we saw Beardy come on screen, and nobody else probably in the cinema knew who he was. But you know, for everybody else, it's probably been pushed onto the fact that it, you know, there's Mike Tyson's in the film. And so what did you make of that fight scene? And you know, for listeners who haven't seen it, like what did you think of that?
I was quite interested. I'm not, you know, I can't contain the excitement that when I heard Mike Tyson was going to be in a martial arts film and Donnie Yen's going to fight him. It kind of reminded me of some of Donnie Yen's earlier films in the 90s, like
Oh yes, with oh gosh, what was that guy's name?
You know, the black guy.
I'm thinking Danny something, but that might not be him.
I like that fight scene a lot, man. But you could tell that guy was a bit more martial arts trained. But the way in which the choreographers were going to use him, you just knew, you know, the fight scene would work out well in Tiger Cage, and it did.
So it was
to be similar to that.
It was Michael Woods, wasn't it? Yeah. Michael Woods, because name, that's because he's got because Donnie Yen's best friend is a John Salvetti, I think is how you pronounce it, and he's done a lot of. He was during that early era as well in the 80s when they were making films like Tiger Cage 2, and my other personal favorite of Donnie Yen's is In the Line of Duty 4. And they have another wicked fight.
Because he's in that film as
That's like they have a wicked fight on the. It's always on the top of a rooftop somewhere.
Yeah, that's the one where he's holding the chain.
Yeah. No, the chain one, I think, is. I mean, the chain one is Tiger Cage 2. And the one on top of the roof in The Line of Duty 4 is where he's wearing a white jacket. Donnie's wearing a white jacket, and I think both Michael Woods and him are both wearing white jackets. And then you think about we're just going off topic because we just love this genre of film, so we're gonna do that, listeners. I'm sorry. In Tiger Cage 2, he has that fight. It's like in that industrial sort of factory unit, as most kung fu films are, and he's fighting with a chain, because he's tied up, isn't he? I think in that film he's got his hands. He's handcuffed, and he's literally just beating Michael Woods and whoever else he's fighting just with his kicks. And that's where you really realize that Donnie Yen is just the Don when it comes to, like, you know, he's famous for his legwork. You know, people might not know that by watching Ip Man 3 or Ip Man, because it's all about hand, but he's most famous for his, you know, his triple kick. And that's what he's known for.
And that spinning kind
sort of like roundhouse kind of back kick. Yeah, he's just a dog. Gosh, you know. You got me started now. I'm well excited just thinking about those old films now.
I know you asked me about the Tyson bit, but I just had to reference that because that's kind of like what this fight scene was going to be like. And I enjoyed it. I kind of wish there was a bit more.
Yeah.
But because Mike Tyson being a boxer, he's just going to be all about handwork, which I suppose does suit the Wing Chun style quite well in terms of two characters just battling it out.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it was an okay fight. I would like to see a little bit more technicality from Mike Tyson. But I like the way they made him maneuver and exaggerate his boxing moves, like when he was dipping. I really like seeing that. It just reminded me of Balrog from Street Fighter.
There you go.
I'm sure they based Balrog off of Mike Tyson anyway.
Well, there you go. Now that Tyson's got a film career, maybe... You know, any producers who are looking to do a Street Fighter reboot, you know, they've already got Balrog. The character of Balrog is basically there for the taking. They've got Mike Tyson to do it.
Yeah, I mean, also another thing to mention is this is actually Mike Tyson's first role in an action movie.
Oh, yeah, actually, you're right.
So, you know, I'm going to give him props. I'm sure he had to prepare for it and how he's going to work alongside, you know, other practitioners of, you know, the arts, fighting styles.
Yeah, I mean, apparently,
I'm sure, you know, he's aware, but he probably never had to face a challenge like this before.
Yeah, apparently he broke his finger, didn't he? Or his little finger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently he broke it while he was there in that fight scene. And Donnie Yen was like, he just carried on. He was a proper soldier. Didn't say nothing.
Jeez.
I think Donnie was saying he was very lucky not to get beat himself, you know, because he's proper powerful, man. Tyson is, you know, and you do see, they do showcase how powerful his punches and stuff are in the film. But it was good. I think, you know, having Tyson in there, his role, I guess, you know, could have been anybody, but I think it was a good selling point, a good marketing point. You know, it doesn't do anything, it does nothing for the story. It's purely just, it's just there for the fact that he's fighting. You know, Mike Tyson, I think, and but it's good though. It's definitely a good thing to see. From there, like I said, we move on to, like, it's all story. It's the whole part of Ip Man and his wife who's dying of cancer. Because then the other character, the other Wing Chun master, has obviously gone against the baddies, and he's doing his own thing. That whole kind of storyline is kind of like just left, and then the storyline moves into him challenging Ip Man for the kudos of being the best Wing Chun sort of person in Hong Kong, and he challenges Ip Man to a Wing Chun contest to see who's got the purest Wing Chun and who's the best. But throughout all this, Ip Man's not returning any of the invitations because obviously his wife's has basically been told she's got X amount of months to live. So he starts trying to spend more time with her. It was really touching. Like, you know, they go dancing together and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it was really, really well shot, I thought, and really well made, that part of the...
I mean, for me, that was actually the turning point of the movie. And that's when it kind of made me realise that It's not just about the man that we've seen in the two previous films as just being this fighter.
Yeah.
You know, his wife supported him throughout the whole of his career and always actually secretly enjoyed watching him and seeing him do the thing that he loves most. And yeah, there's a nice scene in there where I don't want to spoil it for you guys, even though we probably have already. But there's a nice scene in the film where she basically encourages him to carry on and train.
Yeah,
which is really nice. But it definitely takes quite an emotional turn in that section of the film.
Yeah, it's really quite sweet because she's like, you know, you're spending, you know, you've got this challenge from the character or Zhang Jing, whichever, however you say it. I think he's got like a Western name as well, like Max something, I think.
I've heard that.
I'm sure there's like some, you know, like how they all get like Western names attached to them. I'm pretty sure Yun Wu's like English Western name was Jimmy, I think.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I think it's, so, you know, and like, you know, obviously you got Jackie Chan and all the stuff. So. So here, that guy's that character is obviously just waiting for this challenge with Yip Man, and obviously he's beaten everybody else up till this stage, and yeah, his wife says, you know, I haven't heard you practicing on, you know, on the wooden dummy for a long time, and you know, obviously that's, you know, she takes comfort in hearing him train and stuff like that, and she goes, no, you need to train, you need to practice, and you know, have this one last fight for me. And stuff, and she can tell that his life is around Wing Chun and how he's desperately missed it and stuff. I thought that was really sweet. I thought it was a really good part of the story. And then obviously the, you know, the final fight is with the character, Jing Jiang's character, and they obviously fight, you know, to see who's the best, I guess. There is a fight in between that as well for I forgot to mention, which suits Wing Chun perfectly, is the fight in the elevator with the Thai, the Muay Thai boxer. Yeah.
I forgot about that scene actually, but yeah, that was a nice tight, clean fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think the actress who plays Ip Man's wife, I think she said she got hit. I think she got hit in that scene, I think she was saying. In the elevator, but that suits Wing Chun perfectly because it's such close quarters. So that was a really good fight. Again, very short, and then it was finished with, and then you don't see the guy again. And then you move into obviously the main fight, which I thought was good. Again, it was again very cinematic the way it's been filmed. I thought again it wasn't as wicked as it could have been, but obviously you've got to take into consideration that Donnie's now in his 50s, early 50s, you know, and everyone's obviously moved on. So the style has probably had to accommodate some of that. Even though, that being said, Donnie still looks in great condition. You know, they had the knives. There was, you know, they had the knives in there in this film. So then there was very, you know, the Wing Chun weapons were used. You know, the long staff and stuff, the long pole and all that kind of stuff. Again, do I think Sammo would have done a better job? Personally, yeah. When it comes to weapons, I think there's no one like him who does weapons choreography the way that he does it. But that being said, the fight was still great. There was a couple of, you know, I think the fight was great. You know, it finishes obviously with, you know, Ip Man wins and his wife's happy and all that kind of stuff. But there was elements of 3D, which I haven't touched on as well in the film. The film was shot in 3D, or there's elements of it shot in 3D. And for me, I mean, we didn't watch it in 3D, which I should say. So, it might look really good in 3D for those who've seen it in 3D. It'd be interesting to see what you guys think, but I don't know. There was the elements that were shot for 3D. I don't know if I'm a big fan of that stuff. I'm not sure if I'm a big fan of 3D kung fu films.
Yeah, I mean, the main reason why, again, just looking at it artistically, it looks great, but when I'm watching martial arts films, especially Ip Man. And Wing Chun style, you want to see those little details because that's what Wing Chun as a style is about. Mm-hmm. Really close quarters, small foot movements. You know, you see this kind of footwork technique highlighted in a lot of Sammo's choreography, right?
Yeah.
And those are the little elements, the little intricate pieces that most people are like, ooh, I really like that. And I feel that the 3D camera took you away from that a bit because it was too close.
Yeah.
And it seemed like there's a lot of angles and things changing all the time. In a way, you couldn't track the fight as well as you could if the 3D cameras weren't being used. But
yeah. Yeah, that's
that. A nice experiment, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it might be interesting to, you know, if I watch it again, maybe I'll watch it in 3D to see if it was. Now, there was, like, I think the bit where that you can, it's highlighted where it was clearly 3D, which is, I guess, is another point that we didn't mention, and probably be the final point to talk about, is obviously the Bruce Lee character is introduced in this film, and right at the beginning you see the Bruce Lee character played by Danny Chan. You know, he's brought in at the beginning, and he comes he asks Sifu to take him as a student. You know, and I think that the clip's available online, and you know, it's just interesting. Like, you know, he gets out his cigarette, and then, you know, so the character playing Bruce Lee obviously kicks out his cigarettes and shows how fast he is and all that kind of stuff. That stuff is clearly shot for 3D. I think when I saw that bit, I was a bit like, oh no, I hope the whole film's not shot with that in my, and it wasn't, and it doesn't detract from the rest of the film, all the other fight scenes. You know, it was just the bits like that just remind you that there were elements, you know, shot for with 3D, I guess, in mind. But I guess, yeah, so I mean, the Bruce Lee character, I'm happy they brought the Bruce Lee character in, because there was talk about it being CGI. You know, it was, I thought it was really cool when I saw that. I think that the rest of the crowd as well were, you know, right at the beginning, you see the character playing the Bruce Lee character. I think everybody was like, yeah, just to have it in there, just to mention it. I think, you know, I mean, it's important to say that the character's not in the film, as in, like, he doesn't have a role or anything. He does. They do obviously touch on the fact that, you know, he was into his cha-cha dancing, because so when Ip Man misses one of the dancing classes that his wife had arranged, and he obviously goes back later on in the film to spend more time with her.
That was a
wicked touch. He's like, you know, I'll teach you how to dance. You know, you can teach me, you know, Wing Chun. So, what did you think of having the Bruce Lee character in the film?
Yeah, I personally really liked Bruce Lee coming in as that cameo, or the character rather coming in as that cameo, because, you know, it is all about Ip Man and his legacy. And everyone knows that, or some people aren't aware that that Bruce Lee was taught by this excellent teacher. And in some ways, when you think about it, Bruce Lee is always referred to as being almost very Western and an American-born action hero. And just by tying those two, always traces back the roots to, no, actually, it's come from a very traditional, very traditional and cultural individual like Ip Man. Yeah. So I think it's nice to have that for a much more important meaning. But in terms of the film, artistically, it was a really nice touch. It just shows the time frame as well, and how advanced Ip Man was as a martial arts teacher, and just as a philosopher as well, because a lot of his values were instilled into Bruce Lee. And people respect Bruce Lee for some of those values. So to tie the film in that way, I think maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel as though it meant a lot to me anyway, to see him.
There is one thing that I should probably point out on the end of that Bruce Lee thing, just because it's a bit of a geek thing, and other sort of geeks have probably noticed it. I think the film, if I'm not mistaken, the film is set in 59. The thing about that is, by that point, Bruce had actually already gone to America. So I don't think actually he was even in Hong Kong at that time, because he would have gone to America. But that being said, if you just ignore the fact that I don't think he was actually there, he would have done some training for years before that anyway. But that being said, it was still great to have the Bruce Lee character in there, you know, however he was, and Danny Chan plays a brilliant Bruce Lee, you know. He's got the mannerisms and everything down to a T, and I think you're going to see that in I forget which film it was, whether it was Shaolin Soccer or Kung Fu Hustle. He did a brilliant Bruce Lee-esque thing before, and he did a TV series as well based on Bruce Lee. So he's got the Bruce Lee sort of thing down perfectly. I guess that's pretty much it. I think thank you, Mikhail, for your time. I can hear my kids screaming downstairs. I should probably go and help out my wife, because she's probably like, ah, I've left for these kids. You said you're only going to be an hour a day. You've been like two. I thought, you know, I just wanted to just do a quick recap of the film. I want to say a massive thank you to you, Mikhail, for taking time out to join me on this.
Thanks for letting me come in, man. I mean, we could probably just continue this talk afterwards, but we won't do that right now. But seriously, thanks for letting me come in today, man. It's been a pleasure.
For sure, man. And I want to, you know, I just want to say that, you know, one of the things I said this year is I want to try and do a few more of these podcasts, and I want people to be involved. That was some of the feedback I had from the last one, was that they enjoyed some of the, you know, the information and stuff like that, but it would have been good to bounce off somebody else. And you know, so I'm really grateful that you took the time, Mikhail, to join me, because it's a lot more fun having somebody to bounce off. Because like now, like I said, you know, we can just go off on a tangent and we'll be talking about, you know, this, and then all of a sudden we'll be like just throwing something about Tiger Cage 2. So you know, and people who maybe are just new to Donnie Yen, I'm jealous, because I'm like, you know, you guys have got so many great films to explore. It's like, you know, when you first get into Jackie Chan, you realize he's got so many films, and it's great. You try and source all these films. So you know, by mentioning, you know, Tiger Cage 2 and In the Line of Duty 4, you know, hopefully, if you guys don't know about Donnie Yen, you'll go and try and source those films. You know, and you know, you'll get to appreciate some of the classic Donnie Yen films. So I think it's great to have somebody to bounce off. And is anybody else listening who wants to join me for another one, and you want to talk about an area of martial arts cinema that you guys are really passionate about, or an actor or an actress or a certain film? You know, definitely please do get involved. I'm just doing everything through Twitter. It's just twitter.com/ Auburn Digital, AUBURN Digital. And that's sort of my sort of personal project, sort of creative stuff that I'm doing outside of my sort of videography and all that kind of stuff that I do. This is just a personal project. You know, we don't get paid for this, and there's no advertisements or anything like that. It's just something that I wanted to do, and just to talk about something that I'm very passionate about, which is Kung Fu films, and hopefully connect with other people like Mikhail and other people who are passionate about Kung Fu films, and we can just relive those classic movies. Do you know what I mean, Mikhail? Just relive those good old times, man.
Man, I've got so many films that still I would like to see now. I mean, I need to watch SPL again and probably have a look at SPL 2. But
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, any chance you can get to talk about Kung Fu films is a win, right?
Absolutely. Wicked. All right, man, thank you so much for your time, and I want to say a big thank you to all the listeners who've taken time to listen to this podcast. We'll see you on the next one, and hopefully it won't be a year until episode 3 of the Dragon's Forever podcast comes your way. So peace and all the best, everyone.